Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeannie, and this is another episode of Let's Grow Jeannie. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you. Today I'm coming solo along with my sidekick, Jermaine. Jermaine's going to get involved in the calls, and I'll be asking him to answer some things during this call. Say hi, Jermaine.
Hey, Jeannie. Hey, everybody. How you doing today? Hopefully I can bring it like Jeannie and Jeff does every week. So wish me luck, guys.
I'm sure you'll do fine. Okay, so this week's high five is going to go to Jennifer Hale, who just closed an 88-unit in Huntsville, Alabama. The purchase price was $2.675 million, raised $1 million. Value plays, tenant pays everything except for the trash. It's below market rents. There's deferred maintenance of about $280,000, and we're looking to exit the property in about 5 years for $4.5 million. So congrats to Jennifer. She also put under contract another property in Huntsville. That would be her third. So she is flying fine, and you give that girl just one little inch, and she'll take a mile and take it to wherever she can get it. So we congratulate her for taking action and making sure that she provides for her family in the best way possible. Okay, so anybody have any questions today?
Okay, just as a friendly reminder, if you have a question, please press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Okay, so no questions yet, but I did get a question faxed over to us. Number one is, how does one select a zip code to target the campaign? Well, first of all, you want to pick the area you want to invest in. And then check out the average income in that area. And then you can get a target list of zip codes that you want to pursue. They also are asking for direct mail letters, which has had the most success. And it's the one that says, I want to buy your property, straight across the top. We have the most success rate. That's the one that initiated us to put in a fax back form every time we did a mailing, and we got a lot of activity. The next thing related, this was Ron Howard that sent this in. How many times should I blanket the selected zip code before I target another area? Well, what we like to do is we like to start with about 100 mailings to see what the response rate is before going into a large mailing, like 1,000 pieces. So we start with 100, we see what the response rate is, and depends on that, we target the market for that. You should blanket an area about 5 times because they may not be ready now, but they will post your letter up on their refrigerator, and when they are ready, they will come back to you. Any questions right now, operator?
Yes, we do. We have one question. Our first question comes from Lisa. Lisa, please go ahead.
Hello, Jeannie. It's Lisa Schmidt. How are you?
Hey, Lisa. I'm good. And how are you? And how is Paul?
He is wonderful. We're both doing great, plugging along and moving forward. So doing very well. Thank you. I think I'm
good.
A little warmer than both you and Paul are, though.
Yeah, we're 20 today, and everything
man.
Is iced over. But there's nothing that can compared to this weekend. We went from snow to snow to more snow.
I know. I was watching as I was outside in my flip-flops.
Oh, really? Well, our guys were out of school on Thursday, Friday, and again on Monday. Really
wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that weather. I can't say I missed it, Jeannie, but I'm glad you're all safe.
We are.
Good, good. Well, I have a question for you. We have been targeting one of the markets that we're looking in. We have a property that we're targeting, and what we're finding out is that it's in an area that appears to be targeted, I guess is the best way, for some redevelopment. It is not, when I talk to the Economic Development Committee, when I talk to the Chamber, it's basically, I guess a good way to put it would be, it has the eye of the City Council. There was a grant that was given to that area 3 years ago to up the police force. It's an area where there was a lot of crime. It was really like an area that had a bad reputation, and now they're targeting it to try to improve it. And so since they did the grant 3 years ago, crime dropped 48%. The gal that I spoke to at the city council or at the Economic Development Committee, her view is that, you know, even though she doesn't have, of course, a crystal ball, that in 2 years we're going to start seeing things pick up, and in 5 years it's going to be an area where investors are really going to be rushing to. So my question is, there's nothing concrete planned, but is this an area that is it okay to go to this area, or are we just a little bit premature choosing this particular sub-market in this market? The overall market's good, it's just a sub-market within it.
Well, this all depends on your longevity, how long you want to keep the property, and how you're going to be able to entice investors that may have a sluggish start with their cash flow, and then it'll boom on later. So it really all depends. I mean, you could probably get a lot of government grants to help you fix up the place and make it, you know, worthwhile, but it all depends on your target investor, what you're committing to them.
Okay. There evidently are no government grants, but the goofy thing, or just odd, is that this particular property has already been renovated. So it's sitting, you know,
is it 100% occupied?
It's occupied, we believe, from what we can tell from the rent rolls, and we're getting some documentation, more documentation, that it's at about 90 already. So
does it beat the Holy Trinity?
Well, at the right price, it does.
Okay.
Yeah, we're having to come down a little bit.
Here's how I would answer this question. If you can give your investors an 8% preferred rate of return before you guys take a nickel, you can probably weather it out 2 years. But you need to have an exit plan. You need to have an idea when you're going to dissolve the property and get the investors' money back, because the last thing you want to do, especially working with the government, is to hang on to something and then they decide they're going to pass on that project and you're going to be stuck with a property you may not be able to resell.
Okay. So maybe we're a little premature on this.
Yeah, but if it's pretty concrete that they're going to be revitalizing in 2 years, I mean, you could be an early bird. So this is
right.
It's up to you. I mean, if you've got investors that belong to hedge funds or large institutional monies, they're going to weather it out. But if you're the regular 100,000 at a time kind of guy, people that you've met and know, they're not going to be happy.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Jeannie.
Institutional, they just got to place their money. They don't really care about the return. They got to place their money, because if they don't place it, they're going to lose it for next year. So
right,
it depends
right.
on your target market.
Okay. Got it. That helps.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Alrighty.
I very much appreciate it. And Paul says hi, too.
Hey, Paul. Good talking to you. All right, Lisa.
All right. Take care.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye. In this case, Jermaine, if you have something that you want to add, please jump in.
No, what I was going to say was one of the things that she probably can find out if they have like solid contracts from businesses that are coming in, or then that's probably a good indication that those businesses are going to be moving in. So.
Right.
That's all I was going to say, Jeannie.
That's a good point. Hope you got that, Lisa. Operator, any other questions?
Yes, up next we have Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie, it's Tom from Philadelphia. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am terrific. Hey, two questions. One is, I've been working over the broker, the brokers in my two markets pretty well, and I wanted to start a mail campaign. In one of my markets, though, there are only 66 apartment complexes, according to the tax assessor's office, that are in my target range of 100 to 400 units.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds pretty small.
So why don't you do 50 and above?
50 and up?
Yeah.
I can do that. So that gives me 113. So it's better.
Well, that's better. Yep.
Okay.
You might want to broaden your zip code strategy.
This is actually for an entire county.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can look at the adjacent county or something. In my other county is larger. And that one I have 273 buildings that are complexes that are 100 to 400 units. So that one I feel a little better about.
That's good.
Yeah, is that a good size?
Yep.
Okay, good. So, you know, I'm getting...
And Tom, you could probably even combine those two together so you have a little bit more, so...
Right, okay. I will do that. So I'm getting conflicting information so in terms of what stage we are in the cycle. So in my one market, when I talk to the brokers there, a lot of them say, well, you know, this market's been picked over. All the good properties are gone. But when I look at the kind of the macroeconomic variables, you know, to me there's still a lot of there's a long way to go still in terms of the growth of this market. So I'm trying to figure out who should I listen to? Should I listen to the brokers? Should I look at my own data? What do you suggest? And how would I know if we're too late?
I would call the Economic Development Committee and find out what new job growth is coming into the area and what they're doing to revitalize the downtowns in those particular markets. And if they've got job growth coming in, then your idea might be just so. And then the brokers are misinformed. Or you could take down the phone number, and I don't care who has the number because he's very good. But Greg Johnston happens to work for Marcus Millichap, and he can get you statistics on almost any area. So... he could really help you exactly there. He's from Michigan. His office is in Lansing. And, I mean, it's not so far from Philadelphia. So his phone number is 313-415-8919.
Okay, thanks.
Nope, I lied. That last four digits was not right. It's 0009. I was thinking of Eric Stewart. That's his last four digits. So it's 313-415-0009 is Greg Johnston.
Great. Yeah, I spoke with Eric Stewart this morning, as a matter of fact. So that's actually a good segue to my second question.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a deal or... negotiating the letter of intent. I think we're going to come to terms, which is going to quickly put me into capital raising mode. I was hoping you could take a minute and walk through the sponsorship process for me. And my question about that is not only just the process and timing and such, but if I bring all or some of the equity capital to the deal, how would that work in terms of working with a sponsor and that kind of thing?
So, Tom, the sponsor's
yes.
sole responsibility is to qualify you for the mortgage. So
okay.
what that means, if it's a $3 million property and you got an 80% loan to value, they
mm-hmm.
have to be worth $2.6 million. They have
okay.
to have up to 6 months liquidity in mortgage payments, and they have to qualify you. They do not necessarily put any money into the deal, so you would be in charge of raising the money. However, some will help. Some have a bank of people that want to get into a good deal and they're just chomping at the bit, and others won't. Some will have just closed the property. I mean, a couple of people just sold big complexes and are in the market for another property so that they can use some of their money into that. So it's not just sitting there, because, you know, you can't 1031 exchange when it's a syndication.
Right.
So a lot of the sponsors did just sell properties. There's three or four of them just in the last month that sold pretty large complexes and got a chunk of change. So they're looking for people to put money, you know, for them to put money into deals. But their responsibility is to qualify you for the mortgage and to sign on the dotted line to show their tax returns. It's not to raise money.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Okay.
So I'll call you offline to give you some more details about this deal.
Perfect. Right. Perfect.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, up next we have Stephanie. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine. How are you?
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Happy New Year to you both. Thanks so much
and
for
you
all
too.
Your information. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And happy Valentine's Day. I almost forgot.
I know. Yep. Dave gave everybody in the office chocolates except for me. I got jelly beans because I don't
oh.
eat chocolate.
Oh, I know, I know. Dave told us he has a sweet tooth, so I guess that's
oh, yeah.
his way too.
we have an annual thing on Valentine's Day is Dave's father's birthday, so
oh,
they
wow.
all go out for lobster rolls on Dave's father's birthday, and we all in the office get Russell Stover's chocolates, and I always get jelly beans because I don't eat chocolate.
Oh,
so
fabulous.
Well, it's been a tradition now for a very long time. So.
Well, then I think I'll have to stop by the office next Valentine's Day just to make sure I get dialed
in on
that. Absolutely. Because I like chocolates and jelly beans.
You know, I like chocolate, too. It just doesn't like me. It's not worth the pain.
I understand. So I am actually in discussions with a seller on a potential deal. It's in a high-growth market in an A submarket. So it's a desirable location. The seller is asking for $900,000 for the purchase price, and the property needs about $300,000 in renovation upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's leasing the property month to month, and so it's able to garner rent of about $600 a month. But the broker who's showing me the deal, is saying you could get $900 if you do the renovations that we recommend. So when I did the analysis, the deal doesn't work at $900,000 if I have to put in the $300,000. And so But I think that after we do everything, it could have an after repair value that's close to $1.2 million valuation. So I wanted to know, what are some creative ideas that I could suggest to the seller to get him on board with seller financing? Because my thought was that if he were willing to seller finance for the next 9 to 12 months, I could raise and input the $300,000 that's necessary in order to make the repairs and then start to realize the cash flow without having to get financing from the bank.
Okay, so number one, how motivated is he?
Not motivated.
He's not motivated to sell.
No, no.
Okay,
no.
Well,
it's
that could be
off-market listing. Mm-hmm.
It could be a win in your favor. So what I would ask him to do is to stay on the loan, and you do like a lease option with it.
And how would that work, Jeannie?
So you're gonna make the monthly payments plus part of the down payment towards the buying of the property, but he stays on the loan. You're going to run it like you're a subcontractor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you give him a one-year time frame. Because, I mean, to get the property, you only need $180,000. I mean, think about it. That's like one investor.
Right.
So if he stays on the property until you raise the $180,000, give yourself
mm-hmm.
like 6 to 12 months, you get the property and then cash him out totally. And then he doesn't have to spend any money marketing. You could ask him for a 3% repair allowance to get some of the, you know, deferred maintenance taken care of, which isn't a lot, considering you say it needs $300,000. But
mm-hmm.
if the maintenance that it needs is cosmetic,
mm-hmm.
you don't need to do it all at one time. The place has occupants, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you just one at a time move these people into another apartment while you fix
mm-hmm.
up theirs and get that rent ready. I mean, there's some value plays. That the other thing you have to think of is, does he have a recourse loan or a non-recourse loan? Because if he's got a recourse loan and you can take over the loan,
uh-huh.
if he's a non-recourse loan and you can take it over, that would be great. If it's a recourse loan, I mean, it's not going to make one difference or the other.
Right.
Because it's very hard to find somebody to sponsor a recourse loan.
Mm-hmm.
They usually don't want to do it because then they're on the hook.
Right.
Unless you can sponsor it yourself, which I do not
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's something else you got to think of. Jermaine, you have any thoughts on that?
No, you said it perfectly, Jeannie. My only concern is that when you first said it, when you first mentioned it, Stephanie, is that you said that all the apartments month to month, because that's something that would be a concern to Jeannie and I
yeah.
if we saw that on a rent roll.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I would not like that. I wouldn't like
right.
that because that leaves uh-huh. that leaves you very exposed that they could have
mm-hmm.
a mass exodus. And then you're in charge of making the mortgage payments on your own.
Especially
okay.
if you start doing maintenance, rehabs and things of that nature,
right.
people probably tend to start moving because of that.
Okay. I see. So how would a lease option work? I would go to the seller and I'd
skip the words lease option. Why don't you
okay.
do this? Why don't you ask him if
mm-hmm.
he will stay on the loan until you raise the down payment, which could
mm-hmm.
take 3 to 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll buy the property outright at his agreed-upon price.
So in the meantime, do I own the property, or what? What is the nature of the exchange between me and the seller?
No, he's staying on the loan. He's staying on the loan. You're raising
He continues
money.
To own the property. Oh, okay. He continues
he
to own
continues
the property.
He continues to own it. Yep.
But let's say I have the $180 for the down payment. Then what's the nature of the transaction between the seller and I on day one?
Well, if you have it,
because I don't think I don't think I can get a lender.
Well, did you call Eric and ask him? Eric Stewart has amazing capabilities. I'll give you his phone number. It is 321-615-8919. And there's somebody else that I know that does similar to what Eric does, but he owns his own company and may be able to help you if Eric can't. His name is David. His last name is Ruch, R-U-C-H. And his phone number is 303-888-6114. He is the president of Nationwide Mortgage, but he also has a private lending site that he could assist you with this.
Okay. Okay. So then if to the extent that I think that I can raise the rents, then it may be worthwhile investigating it further.
Yeah, but I would say to the seller that due to the repairs you can't pay full price for it, but you would be willing to pay the $900 that he's asked for if he cuts you back $100,000 or $180,000 at closing.
Okay.
So that you have money to do the repairs.
Got it. Oh, I understand. Okay, so my all-in price is $900, net some amount to do the repairs.
Right.
Got it. Okay, great. And then just one other question regarding markets. I've been hearing a lot about Cincinnati and Columbus. Just wanted to get an update on your views on those markets.
I'm going to tell you what Dave's view is, not mine.
Right.
How's that?
Yeah. That's perfect.
So I've got to pull out my little emerging market list, which I just reorganized my desktop, so I got to find it on here because I put everything in alphabetical order. I saw it, but now it's not in alphabetical order. Oh, here it is right here. It's close to alphabetical, but it skipped a line. Yeah, Dave likes Ohio right now. So let me tell you what he says. Cleveland, good. Toledo, fastest moving growing market. Columbus, really good. Dayton and Akron, good. That's it. So those are the areas. Cleveland, Toledo, Columbus, Dayton, and Akron.
Okay, and nothing on Cincinnati?
He doesn't have it on here, but I know he's always liked Cincinnati, and it could be that he just omitted it when he was going through because he talks fast. And what I do is I listen to him do this, and it's recorded, and then I listen at the recording. And he didn't have anything on Cincinnati, but he did on the last one. And he said it was very good. So.
Okay. It was very good.
And Stephanie, if you go to milkeninstitute.org, it'll give you, and you hit, you put in Cincinnati, it'll give you the highlights of Cincinnati, where it was from 2015 to 2016 and where it is now. So.
Oh, okay.
That should give you some idea of what Cincinnati looks like.
Excellent. Great. Thank you both so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Good luck with that property.
Oh, thank you. You'll hear from me.
I'm sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Paul. Paul, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good. How have you been?
Excellent. Thanks. How are
good.
You?
Good. I just had a quick question for you. I'm in a partnership arrangement on an 8-unit apartment complex in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and I'm looking to buy my partner out and take over control of the property. But we need to come up with a price for that property. What would you suggest as a best approach to coming up with a price to that property? Would it be looking for a local appraiser or a local realtor and having them do an appraisal on it? Or should I do an underwriting on the property based upon the current rent situation that exists, the current income situation that exists in a property, and then coming up with a price that way?
Well, how savvy is your partner? How savvy is your partner?
I don't think they're that savvy.
Okay, so I would call the Registry of Deeds and get what the town values the property at.
Okay.
Because typically it's way under what it really is valued at.
Okay.
And you may go from what you think to what they value it out and go halfway between.
That's what I was thinking. Take an average, yeah.
Yep.
And what was that called? The Registry of, what was it?
You can go to the Registry of Deeds or the Town Tax Office, Assessor's Office. Any place will give you what they value the property at.
Yeah. Well, they're probably that savvy that they know about what the tax assessor's office are. But when it comes to commercial, I think they mainly deal with single-family units. This is the only commercial property they own. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, Jermaine, you have any hot tips for today?
I'm going to say the hot tips that I say every week to every student is that you need to start, if you're not doing it now, and trust me, I know because I get your weekly progress reports, you need to start contacting brokers and analyzing deals. So that would be my hot tip of the week is just to go out there and start contacting brokers and start getting some properties coming in so you can start analyzing those deals and making offers.
There you go. So you also want to just make sure that it's well known that you're out there to buy, that you're not out there as a tire kicker. So if you hear that there's hot brokers in the area, call them up, invite them to lunch. Just say, hey, listen, I know you have your group select people that you like to deal with because they can get the job done and close the property so you get paid. I want to be on that list. What do I need to do to get on the list? And, you're sitting across from them breaking bread, and they're going to tell you, hey, you need to show me that you got a proof of funds letter, that you've got some financing in place, so you have connections to financing. There is no better student than a Lindahl student because we open the doorway to all of you. If you want to know something, anything, pick up the phone and ask because 90% of the time we do have the answers.
And if we don't, we know somebody that does have the answer. So.
Yeah, we can find it. We can find the answers. I think we all get so smart by listening to you guys. You ask good questions and we act on them. So this call was only advertised once because Jeff got stuck in Fort Worth, Texas. He couldn't make it home because of the snow. And nobody sent this out more than once, and that could be the reason why we only have a few questions. So if anybody wants to get on and make a statement or talk about something coming up, I will tell you that this weekend we are going to be in Long Beach for the multifamily. Jeff will be in Orlando for the immersion, and I am going to Private Money in Orlando in March, 3, 4, and 5. Bob Bowman and Kim Taylor will be teaching the event. I'll be in the back of the room. We should have a lot of fun. It'll be warm anyways because we're in the cold here. So we got a lot of things going on.
So if you haven't sent in your confirmation forms and you're and as a master student, if that comes with your package, that's something you definitely want to send in because you definitely want to be at that event. It's a fantastic event. So
yeah,
and plus you get to meet Jeannie if you know.
Most people have already met me. But the private money is only done twice a year, and most people walk away with so many helpful tidbits that they learned at that event, and they connected with people, and Bob does an excellent job with value adds and, you know, taking somebody that's never raised money and putting them on the hot seat and having them interview somebody that's already raised money. It's a pretty cool boot camp. And Kim Taylor, she pulls out all stops. She gives you her slides, and it's a pretty awesome event. I'm glad I'm part of it. Any other questions, operator?
Yes, we actually have two more questions. Our next question comes from Kai. Kai, please go ahead.
Hello. Am I live?
Hello.
Hi, this is Kai. Hi, this is Kai from Texas. I have a question regarding setting up a company. Would it be better to set up a LLC or a holdings LLC for a first-timer who is looking to buy their first multifamily apartment complex?
Well, typically, you're going to set up a company LLC, and that is what you're going to put your offers in, and that's where your checks from the property will go. But then, after you've done your letter of intent, you're going to set up a regular LLC in the name of the property. So you really need two LLCs. And then once you get your company LLC, how we used to do it is Dave would get paid X amount of dollars, X amount would go to the company, and X amount would go to his partner. So if it was a 50-50 split to the investors would get their 50%, and then for Dave's 50%, it would be, say, 20% to him, 20% to his partner, and 10% would go to the company. And the money in your company LLC would go for when you buy another property, then you use that for earnest money deposits, et cetera, any out-of-pocket expenses such as attorney fees, et cetera. So you always have money sitting in that account without coming out of your own pocket each and every time.
Mm-hmm. So the 10% that you said Dave puts into the company, that is the first company, right? That's the company that's making the offer.
Yes.
Okay. Is that a holdings company or is it, what kind of LLC is that specifically?
That company is what you're going to be buying properties with. So for the meantime, you can put in an offer on a property in your name and make sure the clause when you put it in says and or assigns. So the assigns part of that will be the LLC of the property. So after you've closed one or two deals, you may want to set up a company LLC so that you're no longer having to fund the out-of-pocket cost until the property closes. The money will be in that company LLC. Hope I explained that okay.
Yeah, it's a lot clearer. I've heard versions of this by Steve and by Jeff. This makes it a little bit clearer as well. Maybe because I've also been going through some things in the 26 competencies, and that clarifies things a bit more. Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Because I'm in Boston and I'm very direct. Maybe that's what it is. I don't sugarcoat my words. I just tell it like it is.
Yes, you do, Jeannie. From the very first email you sent me, you don't mince anything, and I appreciate that. Well, I have another question, actually. It's about the Private Money Bootcamp. Right. Mm-hmm. I think I was speaking with Jamie, if I'm not wrong. I can't remember. This was last month. I'm really interested to go for the one in March in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, are there any creative financing options to go for this? I want to fund this.
No, but you're allowed to bring a guest of your choice, so you could have the guest pay for the camp and you pay for the lodging.
Okay. Well, the guest would be my spouse, though, and I actually want to finance this myself. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jeannie.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Andy. Andy, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Andy from Phoenix.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. If we have a sponsor who is going to qualify for the deal but does not plan to put any money into it, is there a typical percent range that they might expect? And what I'm getting at is if Dave, you know, Dave teaches that we are in for a minimum of 25% ourselves, but we need to have room for those providing the financing that so it'll be attractive to them. How much is left for them after what the sponsor wants?
I would eliminate that 25 number in your head and start with a 30 number no matter what. When we did 25%, that was a long, long time ago. I raised all the money. Dave and Justin, his partner at the time, got the 25%. The investors got the 75%. Those days have disappeared. Now it's anywhere from 30 to 50% that you've really got to wrap your head around. So the minimum is 30. Don't even think about 25 anymore. So that being said, most sponsors don't want to put money into the deal because they really don't have to. I always say the sponsor is going to qualify you for the mortgage. So without that sponsor, you don't have a deal. So you need to consider a 50-50 split with that sponsor. So your real job is to get somebody, maybe somebody like myself, that you know that's very good with people, that can explain things pretty plain and simple, and get them to raise the money for you so that you don't have to worry about having these types of things come in. Now, I know somebody that does earnest money deposits, so that should not be a worry for you. I also know people that are hard money lenders, and you could get the deal at least under contract and do some due diligence while you've got this money. And then you have to have somebody that's attractive enough, and the deal has to be attractive enough to get investors to want to be a part of it.
Okay.
Okay. So, but the
so that how and the person providing the funding, then we would, if we're splitting with the sponsor 50-50, then out of our 50 would go the funds to the one funding the deal, right?
The one funding the deal would be part of the closing. So if you have somebody that's literally working to get the property closed, you could set it up with them that, you know, maybe as part of their work effort that you give them a certain percentage of the deal, because really you're not supposed to pay people to raise money for you. That's sort of a violation of the SEC. But there are people out there that have access to foreign money, that want to bring it into a deal so that they can really get involved and get active and be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that you can do. You can go to Wilson conferences and get yourself into one of their real estate conferences where they have 250 to 300 accredited investors. These investors, they don't have like $500,000. They have tens of millions to hundreds of millions of dollars that they want to buy real estate with. So they could be the one investor, and you and your sponsor could be the other side of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not even syndicating. You understand?
Yes.
So you also will have an acquisition fee in each and every case, and you could take your acquisition fee and your sponsor's acquisition fee and say it's 3% of a $3 million deal. You're talking, you know, $90,000. So maybe you give, you know, $25,000 to the girl that or the guy that raised the money or put you in touch with these people out of your acquisition fee. It's
okay.
Just something that you cut them into. And then what's left over, the $65,000, is split between you and your sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a lot of ways of getting around things, but you want to stay above and above board.
Sure.
So are you coming to the private money in March?
I plan to, yes.
Well, we could sit down and have a chit-chat there.
Oh, sounds good.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes. Up next, we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie and Jermaine. Mark from Tampa. How are you?
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Good.
Very good. Very good. So this is a topic that Jermaine's helped me with a little bit already. So trying to get to the next level on some of this. To fund my first apartment purchase, I've started the process to do 1031 exchange from five single families out of state from my area to sell those and fund the first multifamily. And I'm just wondering if you have any sort of do's and don'ts or advice to get the, it seems like a lot of planets need to align here to get the timing to work out. One key thing is I have no assurance, obviously, if all of them are going to sell at the same time. But have you been through this process or heard more about it where, you know, combining a bunch of properties to buy the next one, and any guidance for me there?
So you didn't say how much these properties are worth. And the way I hear it is you're going to buy the properties with your 1031 exchange monies. So you need to have, to make this work, timing is everything, especially with 1031 exchanges. You got to identify a property, and then you have to close it within a certain window. So you're really limiting your abilities by doing this. So why wouldn't you raise the money with investors or get a partner that already has the money?
Valid question. Yeah, and I think that's in addition to, you know, making this move, I definitely want to pursue that in parallel.
Yeah, because, you know, there's some hiccups that you have to follow with 1031 exchanges. I mean, you're allowed X amount of time to identify a property, but then you only have a short window to close it. And what if your properties have not even sold when your window is coming due? You could have spent a lot of money in earnest money deposits and due diligence and walking the property, hiring inspection, the whole thing, and not even have your 1031 exchange money. I mean, that's like a tightrope.
Right. Those are my exact concerns as well. So it sounds, do I understand you correctly that your guidance is maybe not even to do this at all, leave them as is, and just pursue private investors to do the first deal after all?
Well, I think you should pursue private investors, but if you're not going to pursue private investors, why don't you just take a HELOC loan against them? And then the money's sitting there. You're not doing a 1031 exchange. You're not forced into the 1031 exchange guidelines. You take a HELOC loan out, so property's worth $200, you take $50 out on each of them. Now you have your down payment money and your closing costs. Now you just have to worry about getting a partner to put up the other half. And between the two of you, you split the profits.
Right, right.
And
okay, I think that's
what size property are you going to buy anyways?
Well, if my math is correct, I should come out at the end of this with maybe $320,000-$350K after they're sold. And the value today is roughly $1.2 million. So my assumption is I would go into a similar property to take advantage of the 1031 itself.
And are these all rented and getting constant checks coming in?
Yeah, I have great tenants in them. The rents are coming in. It's just a lowish rate of return on these, maybe 6% or so. They are stable. It's just not growing quite as fast as I'd like.
Mm. Can you do anything to have it grow?
You know, two of them I could probably increase rents and so forth, but the market is stable. It's just not going like gangbusters. And the HELOC option, too, is a good idea, Jeannie. I looked into that. The equity I have in these, you know, most banks will only loan you up to 70% of of your equity. So it's not coming out quite the way I'd like. But.
Yep. Well, I just worry that, you know, if you're waiting for five properties to sell before you can close on your other property, how many times are you going to have to pay to get an extension, which could be substantial? It could be, you know, 40, 50 grand that you're paying out. It's like throwing money away because you weren't within the guidelines of the 1031. That's what I worry about.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for your thoughts on this. I know you guys have probably done these before, so I thought I'd ask the experts. Thanks for the time.
Yep.
Have a good one, Mark.
Okay. Up next, we have Zach. Zach, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie. Hey, Jermaine. This is Zach in Chicago. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Zach.
Hey,
good.
Zach.
I didn't hear from you yet this week. Surprise.
Oh, don't worry, Jeannie. I'll be calling you this week. I got some more questions for you. Hey, I just had a quick, easy one for you guys right now. So as I'm getting into my market here and I'm talking to brokers, I've run across a couple of guys who are more national wholesalers that are not necessarily local brokers to my market here. Just curious what your guys' experience is with those types of wholesalers, and if it's good overall, if they're worth continuing to talk to, or if that's a tricky situation to get into.
Well, wholesaling is a business in itself. I mean, people come in, they see a property with value play, they make an offer on it, which is usually low, and they have a window of how much they need to get out of the property when they sell it. So if you can get a market analysis done on the after cost, you usually can make money.
Well,
and it
saves you
from having to go look for the stuff.
Yeah, I get that. I guess my question was more along the lines of what has your guys' experience been as working with them, as quote-unquote brokers, or they're the ones bringing you properties, bringing you deals? I mean, is there anything to watch out for if you're working with a wholesaler like that, or is it, you know, pretty much the same as working with your local brokers?
Well, they don't have the same ethics as a broker does.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure that everything checks out. So if they get a property and say their intention is to wholesale it, and then they come across, say, lead paint or some foundation problem, anything like that, they don't really have to tell you.
Mm, okay.
Because they're just flipping it.
Okay.
You got any thoughts on that, Jermaine?
No, I was going to say the same thing, or a 50-gallon oil drum in the backyard, or they don't have to disclose that information, whereas a broker would have to do that. So you have to be cognizant of that, Zach.
Okay, gotcha.
But with a wholesaler, because like Jeannie said, they have to get out of it in a certain amount of time, then you probably could get a good deal on that particular property. So there's pros and cons to both these things.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. That was helpful. I appreciate it, guys. Jeannie, we'll be talking to you soon. Don't worry.
Okay, no problem.
Good luck, Zach.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, up next we have Roy. Roy, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. This is Roy out of Dallas. And
hey, Roy.
Hey, Jermaine. And GDO,
made that phone call that we did lose the Cowboys, so I'm okay with that. I do want you to know that I am in therapy. I'm getting better. Okay. I'll see you down there.
What about those Patriots? How about that?
That's right.
They were amazing. You have to say that.
That's right.
They only
absolutely
showed up for one period of the game and they won. Come on.
I'm just glad you're getting it all out now, so when I see you in Orlando.
us people here in Boston are true blue loyal. We are loyal to the fault.
You are.
We're like Cowboy fans when they used to win, Roy.
Okay, all right.
That was a dig, Jermaine.
At least when we finally meet, you know, we'll have all this out of the way. So,
yeah.
Hey, just a point of clarification, a quick question. The sponsor and the investor don't have to be the same people. They're not the same people, right?
No, they're not the same people.
Okay.
A sponsor could want to invest, that means he's getting paid on the management side, and he's also
mm-hmm.
getting paid on the investor side. Some people like that.
Okay.
But as a rule, the sponsor is on the management side, and your investor is an investor.
Okay. And Jeannie, at a high level, you had mentioned Eric Stewart.
Yep.
We often talk about, well, you know, you don't have to have any of your money to make the opportunity happen. So I'm trying to see how, and I'm going to make a phone call to him, but you had mentioned getting qualified.
Yep.
You know, I'll be the first one to confess that I don't qualify for millions and millions of dollars to buy these properties. So how is that process going to work then, if you have time to do it, if you have time to give me a quick explanation?
Well, here's the thing. If you aren't sure, in your case, you're sure, and in my case, I'm sure, too, that I don't qualify for millions of dollars, but if someone was not sure how much they could sponsor for, but know that they do have net worth that does not include their primary residence, it's a good idea to put Eric's feet to the fire to give them a figure so that they know what kind of window of, you know, properties they should be looking at. So the last thing you want to do if you want to sponsor your own deals is if you're worth $5 million, you don't want to go looking at $8 and $9 million properties.
Okay.
So if you're only worth $1 million, you probably want to look at something around $1.5 million and under so that you can sponsor your own deals. But if you cannot sponsor your deals, don't even bother putting yourself through the ringer. Just say, I know I need a sponsor, and we're going to move on from there.
Okay. Okay, great. All right. That clarifies that and puts me at ease. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay,
hey, you're
going
to get to the point. You're going to get to the point, and people are going to be calling you up to sponsor them. So do not give up, because it does happen. If somebody,
oh, absolutely.
If somebody was at the sponsorship event last December, and a year ago, he was filing for bankruptcy. So it does happen. He pulled himself right out of the woods. And he got himself into a spot where he can now sponsor deals.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
That's encouraging. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
See you in a few weeks. Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Have a good one, Roy.
Okay, up next we have George. George, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jermaine. How are you doing?
Hey, George. How are you?
How are you?
Very good. Very good. I got to get you your reports, Jermaine. I haven't had a chance to put them together.
Thank you.
I've been very, very busy. Yeah, I'm working on a few areas. I was working in an area in Indiana, but with my research, how common is it that population is a big big factor in making sure that there's a population growth?
Well, you want to make sure that there's enough jobs coming into an area to produce people moving into that area. It's all based on job growth. And if there's no jobs coming in, the likelihood of getting new people to come into an area is slim.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on the job growth. For Indiana, Fort Wayne is a really good market. And Indianapolis is a good market. It's a little bit slower, but it is a good, steady market.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking more closer to the river area.
Mm-hmm.
Evansville. What do you think of that area?
It's not on Dave's emerging market list, but I mean, he couldn't possibly announce every single area.
Sure.
So I again would go to the Milliken report and find out.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I did. I didn't see anything on there. In some of the cases, the city just doesn't make it to that size. Also, I was looking at Austin, Texas. Is there anything good about Austin?
Oh, Austin's
great.
Well,
let me tell you about Austin. It's a good market, but because it's the capital, it's a little bit slower, and I would stay more towards the secondary markets if I were you.
Okay.
But it is a good market. So I'll give you the Texas market for Dave list. Austin is good. Texarkana is good. Dallas, secondary markets are better. Fort Worth, pretty much all of Texas is good with the exception of Beaumont. Stay clear of Beaumont. Katrina refugees are still there. McAllen is the largest land port in America. Amarillo, Tyler, Irving, Longview, Waco, San Antonio, Brownsville, Houston. El Paso is the only one not a good market. So El Paso and Beaumont are the two to stay clear of.
How about San Antonio?
Very good market. He claims it's a great market with a lot of areas like San Marcos. If you buy and hold, it's going to explode.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Thanks a lot, Jeannie. It was nice talking to you.
You're welcome.
We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Yes.
All right, sweet. You take care. Take care, Jermaine. I'll talk to you soon.
See you later, George. Have a good one.
You too.
Okay, up next we have Jesse. Jesse, please go ahead.
Hello, Jermaine. Hello, Jeannie.
Hi.
Hey.
Calling from San Antonio. Mm-hmm. I just want to thank you guys. You guys have been coaching me from afar. So this is the first time I get to thank you, Jeannie, and Jermaine, I've spoken with you. I'm going to thank you again.
You're
no
welcome.
Problem.
We appreciate
You're
you.
Welcome.
You speaking up.
The process works. I just want to say that. I've only been in about a month and a half, and I feel like the I just did about two rounds of calls, and this past week I exploded with just my email exploded with like six deals that I get to analyze now. So I'm excited about that. But what I'm finding as I'm looking through these is that I don't know if this is something I should look out for. Are there any red flags if you're analyzing a property that had a lot of CapEx the previous year?
Can you repeat that, please? I'm sorry.
Yeah. If a property has the previous year had a lot of CapEx, or they'd spend a lot of money to renovate the property, and now they're trying to sell it, is there any red flags that I should be weary of or like look at and make sure that I don't overlook?
No, that's what usually happens. They fix it up and they sell it so that they can get a higher value. So you got to make sure your underwriting is spot on. You still
okay.
have to put CapEx in there because the bank's going to tell you what you've got to carry for CapEx. It could possibly be $250 a door is going to be sufficient if they fix the whole thing up. But maybe their fixing up is not your fixing up. Maybe you want to put granite countertops and laminate flooring in, and maybe they just wanted to steam clean the carpets and wipe down the counters. You know, you're not sure what they did. So when you walk the units, you got to make sure that you write down everything that you see that you would like to have done. But usually they get a higher price for rehabbing properties. And that's the only
okay.
reason why they do it.
All right. So when I'm analyzing a deal and I'm looking at some of my other closing costs,
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of stuck there. Should I put that amount lower or should I still try to collect a whole year's worth of CapEx up front, or how should I do that if they've just spent that much money on the property?
Well,
the bank is
going to tell you what to carry. So what I do with the underwriting is I'll put $250 a door. Unless I think it needs work, then I'll up it. But when I do my closing costs, I put the 3% for closing costs, 1% for loan points. And then if I know something needs to be done, like repaving the parking lot, I'll put that in CapEx, in closing costs, other, so that you have the money to do the work should the bank take all of your CapEx money hostage until you do the work, because you need to submit receipts on a quarterly basis in order to get the funds directed back to the property. So I want to have the money in a holding area, and I put that in closing costs other to make sure that I have the funds to do the work.
And that's actually my question. How, if it's a market that's not in your backyard,
mm-hmm.
and how are you going to know some of that stuff unless you walk the property? So how do I analyze the deal ahead of time?
You have to
make
depend
sure.
on the broker. You have to depend on the broker, and you might want to go on to comments made by the residents, because they talk. I mean, every review that goes on. And if you really don't know and you're wondering if they're lying to you, spend $100 and send a secret shopper in there to go and check things out for you.
Hmm. Okay. And how do you ask the broker how do you ask the broker if the seller's giving you allowance for repairs, or do you ask them if there's deferred maintenance, or like what's the phrase, or what's the question?
You put that in your letter of intent. If they're advertising the property that has been completely refurbished or overhauled yourself, then you can retrade when you go and do your due diligence. But if you're not sure and, you know, from the naked eye it looks like it needs some work, then you can put your 3% repair allowance in on your letter of intent.
Okay. All right. But I should still ask the broker up front, right? So I can, if he has that information, I can at least factor that into my numbers.
Yeah, ask him to, listen, if he's serious in working for both of you, the seller and you, because he's going to get paid both sides of the coin, if he's serious, ask him to take pictures on his cell phone and send them to you.
Okay. All right, I'll do that.
Yeah, rely on them more than what you think that you should, because you know they're your eyes and ears, basically, the broker.
Yeah, they're
going to
get paid. They're getting paid
okay.
Both sides of the deal.
Well, right now I sound very, I guess they don't seem to have a clue that I'm a newbie, but I don't want to get to the point where I talk too much and then they kind of be like, oh man, this guy's a newbie, he should know this already. He sounded like he knew what he was talking about and now he doesn't.
No, I wouldn't worry about that. They talk to many, many people, new and old. And sometimes people just act stupid so that they get more information. So
got you.
I wouldn't worry about that.
All right.
And you'll be shocked. You probably already some of these brokers, you probably already know more than them anyway. So, you know.
Okay.
Don't be afraid to ask a question. You want to know. So.
Got you. All right, we'll do. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Okay. Up next, we have Trinita. Trinita, please go ahead.
Hey, Jeannie.
Hello there, Trinita. How are you?
Hey, Jeannie. I'm doing great. Jermaine, how you doing?
I'm fine, Trinita. How are you?
Trinita,
I'm doing awesome.
That husband of yours out to dinner tonight?
Yes, I am.
I thought you might be. You celebrate him a lot.
Yes, I do. Anyway, the question I have, what was that name of that conference with the accredited investors that you mentioned?
Wilson.
W-I-L-S-O-N. Okay, and then the other question, is your private money class close to the one Jeff is doing in Orlando?
Jeff is in Orlando this week. I am in Orlando March 3, 4, and 5.
Oh, okay. All right. That's great, because I've taken private money twice, but I think I could use the third time.
There's a lot to learn, young lady.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But great information anyway.
Good.
All right, thanks.
All right, Janita, have fun tonight.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, well, it's 2:15, and I think we're time to wrap it up this week for questions. And if you had a burning question and didn't get answered, please feel free to email either Jermaine or myself, and we will be happy to answer your calls at any time. So my email is jeannie@rementor.com, and Jermaine's is jevans@rementor.com. See you till next week. Take care. Have a great week. Enjoy Valentine's Day.
Enjoy Valentine's Day, everyone. Enjoy. And when you see me, wish me happy 20th anniversary. Today's my 20th anniversary, wedding anniversary. So.
Oh, I didn't know. I would have bought you a cupcake.
I don't need that, Jeannie. I got candy.
All right. Take care. Thank you, operator. Goodbye.
Have a good one. Bye, guys.